Well, hello there. Oh, I've got lots of letters for Santa today. And every year, they're the same. Some ask for toys, but a lot ask questions.
A yo-yo?
If you wish to give me a present?
I'd like to be a dentist.
Greetings, Christmas Specials We Love podcast fans. Welcome to part two of our coverage of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. In this episode, we continue with our scene breakdown, but also we discuss the controversy around Rudolph. Very interesting. Anyhow, we really hope you enjoy this show, and we look forward to giving you more. Here is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, part two. So Hermie pops up. I'm a dentist. I don't need anybody. I'm independent. And it's so cute. And Rudolph says, I'm independent too. And so what do you say? We both be independent together. And Rudolph says, you don't mind my nose. And then Hermie's like, well, if you don't mind me wanting to be a dentist, I just thought it was such a sweet moment. And then they sing the Misfit song together and they press on. But Sam is nice enough to mention this truth, which is that the world is more complicated and dangerous than when at home. You know, because at least at home, they're safe. They're just miserable. But they're safe, which goes back to your original point about the parents and every. And by the way, most people want to conform. It's about keeping it safe, you know, right. And it's right. Fear of what's on the other side of not doing that. The Abominable Snowman appears, but Hermie douses Rudolph's nose. And this is the first time, and you hear this many times, where Rudolph just keeps blaming himself. It's my nose. It's my nose. But Hermie blocks it. And then we see Sham shuddering. Oh, and we go to the commercial break. But I always, as a kid, I don't know why. I was always nervous with Sam.
I hated when he shuddered. That made me shudder.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah, it did.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we come back from commercial, or if most of you people didn't have to deal with commercials, I'm sure. Yukon enters, and then Hermie and Rudolph pop their heads out of the snow. They had jumped into the snow to hide. Yukon proclaims he's the greatest prospector in the North. He throws an axe. He licks it. Nothing. And by the way, without the peppermint scene at the end, all of that was confusing to me as a kid. Because there was no payoff with the peppermint. I'm like, okay, is that what prospectors do? They, when they look for gold and silver, they lick? It was always confusing. So then we cut
to
Sam.
Don't hate on my Yukon, Kev.
Yeah, no, I'm not. It was the fault of the editors. When you take out that scene, it didn't make any sense. And you're talking about decades of that scene not existing.
Right.
So Sam the Snowman asks us, what do you think of Yukon Cornelius? And then my translation was, who cares? What a great chance for me to sing a song. So then Burl Ives takes out his song to sing Silver and Gold, which again, I have to think is less about his contractual needs and more about, I think that they're thinking of the grandparents watching this with the kids.
Well, and Kev, did we talk about this in production notes? I don't remember. That song was originally going to be sung by Yukon.
No, it was. I said at the beginning, Yukon sings them all. And then he gets the Hollywood tap on the shoulder or phone call that many of us receive time and time again, which is like, you know what? Love what you did, Bubby. Great stuff. However, we're moving in another direction.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, but we'll keep your headshot on file. Back to Yukon. He explains he's off to get supplies. His little cute dogs won't mush, of course. So Yukon, being so amazing, pulls the sleigh with the dogs and with Hermie and Rudolph. And to me, he is the superstar. He's the man.
He is.
They see the bumble. And once again, Rudolph, it's my nose. What I love about Yukon is he's less fearful. You see, he doesn't really panic. He's like, we have to think. And of course, his thinking leads him to say, we have to run, because that is the right thing to do. But I love that he chose no fear. And I remember as a kid feeling reassured when he was there. I wasn't as afraid. Nice. When he was in scenes, they get trapped and on the iceberg, or before it's an iceberg. And once again, Rudolph says, it's my nose again. It's ruined us. And it's so shamed, you know. Yukon, being amazing, knows Bumble has one weakness. Bumble sink. So Yukon takes out his trusty pickaxe. He frees them. Yukon scores again. He throws up his big axe and he licks it. Nothing. He doesn't find anything on the axe. And Kev, no silver, no gold.
There's a big payoff there, too, when we see what the bumble really looks like and how tall he is. That was really scary. I can remember.
Yeah. And the fangs and this. But, you know, he's, of all the mean, scary monsters you probably see in childhood, he's also the goofiest.
Right.
Right. In retrospect,
He shows a little more goofiness as time goes on. But you see, like, when he can't swim, you see, like, moments of him where he's human. You know, he's
good point.
He turns into, like, he gets scared. He climbs out of the water. So Yukon says, you're going to stay with me. We're going to strike it rich. We will find gold. And then Hermes like, but I thought you wanted silver. And he's like, I changed my mind. And to me, this shows why he's a misfit, too, because he's a little lost. Is it gold? Is it silver? Is it peppermint? You know, and Sam the Snowman says, well, they don't really know where they're going.
Right. Hmm.
They just know they have each other. You cut back to Donner, who feels bad for how he treated his son, and he's finally ready to be a father. Now he feels bad for what he did. He feels bad about all of it. I'm going to go out and save my son. Donner leaves Mrs. Donner alone and says, and Sam imitates her. Donner says, this is man's work. I know that struck a chord.
Well, hated that part.
Yes.
Huge chord.
Very angry.
Okay, but here's the thing. If the cartoon itself were saying that it was the perspective of Donner, and wouldn't that make sense that he's going to say whatever he has to make sure his wife is not subject to danger?
Yeah.
He's going to go handle it?
He could have said that.
100%. It's all
to be in danger.
Their role, but their roles are all so clearly defined and strict. That just goes along with it. He's got to be a man,
right? Yeah, that's right. His thought, he's got to be a man and go do what he's got to do. And I just think, for me, you leave it at that. That's his perspective, his way. I don't think that was saying it's the way, because look what happens, literally seconds after Mrs. Donner and Clarice. They're like, no way, we're going out to save Rudolph.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's there. But again, like, if you guys want to just focus on all the negativity, and it's the same with Revenge of the Nerds. I could say, just stop focusing on that scene. Take out that scene and look at the rest of the movie. Nope. I'll bring it to Star Wars. There's a great quote in the three Star Wars movies that followed the first three that I think are forgettable. But something about only Sith think in extremes. And when you see things in extremes like that, I'm telling you, it just blocks so much.
But I don't think that we're necessarily seeing it. We just like it. It didn't sit right with us. Like, I'm not like, burn the movie down. It should never exist.
But like, you said you didn't like. Yeah, but you were just tapped out of the whole movie, the whole experience.
Like, I wouldn't watch it again. It wasn't enjoyable to me.
No.
But like, okay, I understand why enough. There are parts that are. I just think that sometimes, like, we, and honestly, rightfully so, but we, like, our generations get labeled quickly with being like, we hate it all. I'm like, that's not always what we're saying. At least I'm speaking for me and Elaine. I feel like
You two aren't like that.
Yeah.
No, you two
aren't like that. But I also get what you're saying. But no, it was just like there.
Most of your generation is. Let's continue on.
Okay, go ahead.
But you two, no, I know you're not like that. But by the way, it's not just your generation. So our whole society's gotten this way.
Yeah.
Everyone is one extreme or the other. And that's just not life.
Mm-hmm.
Yukon, Hermie, and Rudolph hit the fog, and they land upon the island of Misfit Toys, where they're greeted by the official sentry, who is named Charlie. And I think it was Rudolph who says, let me guess your name, or Hermie might say, let me guess your name. It's Jack. He's like, no, it's Charlie. And no one wants to play with a Charlie in the box. And this is where we learn about the Misfit Toys. And the camera pulls back, and we reveal all these Misfit Toys, and the song comes in of, we are on the island of Misfit Toys. And then it ends up going into the most wonderful day of the year. And you find out why a lot of these toys are misfits. How would you like to be a bird that doesn't fly? You know, or a pistol that shoots grape jelly, right? So, but there's also a mention of Island of Unwanted Toys in the song, rather than the Island of Misfit Toys. I thought that was interesting. Rudolph says, we're misfits too. Maybe we can stay. And then Charlie says, you need permission from King Moonraiser. And I remember, forget Rick, I don't know what your take on King Moonraiser like 30 years ago. I'm anxious to see if it hasn't changed. So they come and see the King Moonraiser, the lion, and they ask him if they could stay. And he's like, no, that would not be possible. The island is for toys alone. Yukon says, how about that? Even among misfits, and I capitalize this point, he goes, even among misfits, you're misfits. And I think Yukon is in misfit denial. Like, he thinks that they're the misfits, but he's every bit a misfit as well. He's pulling the sleigh for his dogs. He doesn't know if he's finding silver, gold, or peppermint. You know what I mean? But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, good point.
King Moonraiser goes on to explain, a living creature cannot hide themselves on an island, but perhaps being misfits yourselves, you can help the misfit toys. And Rudolph, of course, being so amazing. It's like, we will. And then King Moonraiser says they can stay the night. Rick, I just remember your thoughts on King Moonraiser back then. I wonder if they've changed.
Well, no, not one bit. He completely obtuse.
Can you
just like, no, I can't really do anything for you, but perhaps there's something you can do for me. I got a lot of misfits here and kind of overrunning the island. Maybe you can help a guy out. It's like just totally insensitive to these poor people who just escaped the abominable snow monster.
Okay.
You know what I mean, though?
Wow.
Rick, don't you feel sympathy? The guy scours the whole planet every night for toys. He's exhausted. He doesn't have time for reindeer
Rick,
and
gotta
people.
Gotta have empathy. Gotta see the big picture here, buddy.
Guess it's a lacking of mine. I got a question about that, though. So how are these misfit toys made? Santa's making them, right?
Ooh.
Well, then they go out and yeah.
So
okay, next
who's really at fault?
Let's go to the next scene.
Wait, we digress.
You guys will appreciate this. You guys will appreciate this because when we're watching, Elaine looks up and goes, "Wait, he's not a misfit. He's cool." And I was like, "Girl, no, he like rules the misfits."
Elaine thought he was cool. I thought he was cool, but I don't like.
But it was interesting, Rick, because I always loved your sentiment and shared it, but I listened carefully to what he says, and he says, unlike living things, they can be alone, they can be isolated, but what he was saying is a human being can't. A human being needs socialization, needs other people, needs love. So if you listen to his dialogue, that's what I took from it, carefully dissecting his, unlike a living creature, living creatures can't hide. You can't hide on an island as a living creature.
Kind of a progressive philosophy.
Yeah. So kind of in a way, I was, now I'm thinking I'm more team King Moonraiser for saving all the misfits, but then also.
So King Moonraiser says, okay, I scour the night every night for these misfit toys and I bring them to this island, but now I need Santa to give them good homes. Why can't you do it on the trip out? Well, you pick up misfit toys.
Okay, can I tell you why?
Sure.
Okay, you've got three little girls.
Yeah.
And down from the chimney comes a giant friggin' mountain lion.
He's a griffin. He's got wings.
Yeah. Faster to get to them and rip them apart and kill them. You might as well have a fire-breathing dragon come down the chimney. Will you stop it, Rick? He's not Santa. That's off-brand. Santa handles the business. It's not a different area.
Seriously, Rick.
Oh, God. Okay. We cut to their quarters and they're all in bed together. Rudolph again wants to leave because he's like, I'm endangering you guys. And he's afraid they're going to get caught if they stay with him. What I love about Hermie and Yukon, they're like, no, we're not having it. It's not even entertained, which is why I love these three, how amazing they are. And again, like when I'm thinking of the redemptive parts of this story, this is one of them where they're like, no, you're not going anywhere. We got your back no matter what. We love you for who you are. And even more than that. And Yukon is even over it where he's like, all for one and one for all for one. And he just snores because it's not even coming into his mind that they're going to separate, which I love.
Right.
But Rudolph
instant best friends.
Yeah. But Rudolph being so also being the caring creature that he is, he's like, no, I don't want to get them in trouble. So he strikes on his own, wishes them well, and then he floats away on his little iceberg alone, which is a sad scene. Sam the Snowman tells us as time passes, Rudolph makes a friend or two, but it wouldn't last long, which was depressing. But during that time, he was growing up. And growing up made him realize you can't run from your troubles. Okay, Kelsey and Elaine. So when you're bullied, the lesson is, you're always going to have obstacles in life. You're always going to have people. You're always going to have people that are going to get in the way. I don't care how much we erase all of it and try to take it all away. It's not going to happen. If you have anything worthwhile you want to do in life, you're always going to have people getting in your way. But the lesson is you can't run from it. And you can't run from your troubles.
Or
so he
hide.
Heads home. You can't, or hide.
Right. Moonraiser.
Thank you, Moon. Well, because he's hiding.
No, he said that. No, King Moonraiser said living things can't hide, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Rick coming around to Moon King Moonraiser.
You little.
So Rudolph heads home. The jerks, of course, still make fun of him. He ignores them. He finds an empty cave, and in comes Santa. And Santa is a little kindlier, somewhat concerned, well, very concerned, because he says none of them are here. They're all been looking for you. And then Santa is less worried about them and more worried about Christmas. But again, I go to the big picture, the millions of kids. Like, heavy is the head that wears the crown, Mr. Veach. Sorry, Rick.
No, right. And Donner's the lead reindeer of his team. So, yeah, he needs them.
And then Rudolph, being the brave little bad bee that he is.
Brave little bad bee.
Thanks, Santa. I'll find them all. And out he goes alone. Storm hits. And Sam, the snowman, calls it the storm of storms. Rudolph braves the storm, knows he has to go to the cave of the abominable snowman. He knows that's where they're going to be. He gets to the cave. What I love is there's Dad Donner. I don't know what he did to defend anyone, but how great is Rudolph? You want to talk about a little bad bee, Kelsey and Elaine. Yeah. He takes on the abominable snowman. No, and he's like the
brave.
You know what, Rick? He's like the jobber wrestler who gets a couple of spots in before he gets squashed. Yeah. But he hits him with his antlers. No, and I love how brave he was in that moment. I remember even as a kid,
backed
I was
so him up. Happy to
see him fight back. And then, of course, the abominable knocks him out cold with a rock. And then once again, we go back to Burl Ives, a.k.a. Sam shuddering, tell me when it's over.
Yes.
So Yukon and Hermie come to Christmas Town. This was interesting. Even though you see no interaction between Sam the snowman and the characters, he does mention he sends them. He apparently they met Sam the snowman in their travels and he sent them right after Rudolph. Yukon and Hermie come upon the abominable snowman cave. Yukon has a plan and the duo plot, which I just love seeing these two work together. Rudolph's out cold. The abominable snowman's hovering. Clarice says, why doesn't he just get it over with? Kind of a really dark moment for that time.
Yes.
You know, for any time. But again, we grew up in a different. And by the way, Kelsey and Elaine, you're probably either sleeping through this part, texting your friends, or judging somebody. But if you weren't, do you recall this moment where you or tweeting at somebody or Instagramming or no TikToking, excuse me. But what did you think? But do you remember that moment where Clarice
I'm not
goes, why
lie, is he just- I probably was doing the newsletter. I don't remember it.
Nice. Okay. Fair enough. I
remember this all, but I don't remember that part.
I thought it was definitely a little bit. I could see where that was would be traumatizing to see.
Yeah,
today.
That was dark.
It was then too, but then Yukon and Hermes start oinking to lure him out, and Hermes doing all the bad oinking, and Yukon's like, "Come on, throw some heart into it." And then out he comes, and Yukon knocks him over the head with a stone using his pickaxe to free the rock, hits him in the head, knocks him out cold. And he says, all right, kid, do your stuff. So once again, the pickaxe, you know, the misfit being a misfit prospector enables us to knock out the abominable. And then Hermie, the dentist, comes in. He says, okay, do your work. He goes to work. Now he says, all right, dentist, do your stuff, which I just love. And even notice when Yukon and Hermie come in to save Rudolph. Rudolph, the first thing he says is, I'll use my nose to guide us. So right in that scene, you saw all the misfit powers come to use. Like all the things they thought they were misfits for were actually strengths, which I thought was a wonderful message.
It was. Did anyone else think Hermie was a little bit psycho here, where he wasn't a dentist, he had just studied, and then all of a sudden he was ripping out the teeth of the abominable?
No, I saw him as passionate. I said he was following his passion. No. And no, not at all. And by the way, I have to say, punishment due.
To the Rick, I'm with you, Ian. Yeah, it's like Marathon Man a little bit. Did you say Marathon Man, Kev?
Yes, yeah. But I don't think so. But see, now my wife would say the abominable's instinct was just to eat, and he's, you know, that's fine, but I don't know. Doesn't mean we all have to die for his instinct. Why don't we take out his teeth and get him a new job?
No,
emasculate him. Great.
No, yeah. But I'm sorry. Am I the only one who loved this? I still love this moment.
I love it.
I just love, because here's the thing. The Misfits have been so powerless this whole special, pretty much. And the cockiness of Hermie, who, you know, is belittled by his staff, everyone around him, his boss, for him to just enter so cocky and for UConn even to say, don't let this blowhard bother you, just walk right by him. Like, the whole special, we've been running from him. Yes. And they're like, no big deal, party's over. And I just love, you see the goofy side of, again, of the Bumble, but UConn says, that's one mighty humble Bumble. And then UConn just goes, such badass. Now let me at him. Now it's a fair fight. Let me at him. And he and his dogs back up the scared bully of the Bumble, and then they go over. And that was a real sad moment as a kid to see.
Oh, yeah.
When you thought, yeah, you're led to believe that UConn he's perishes. Gone. Yeah, he's gone. Oh, my God. Even he's you gone. Saying that, Rick, right?
UConn.
Yeah, and to see Rudolph lower his head.
Oh.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Then Sam comes in, the snowman. They're sad, but they need to get the women back.
Right.
Sorry. But so they make it back, and everyone realizes they were hard on the Misfits. Maybe even Santa was wrong. I think Santa was definitely wrong. And we see nice Santa finally. Like, I just remember as a kid breathing a sigh of relief when he was like, Rudolph, I promise I'll find homes for all the Misfit toys. And then we see the foreman with his cavities. And he's like, all right, you can be a dentist. And sure enough, he's going to pull the cavities out of his head. And then Donna, the dad, apologizes as well. And just when you think it's over, UConn comes back in. It's a night out there that's neither fit for man or beast. You know, here's the man, here's the beast. And in comes the Bumble, and everyone panics. And he goes, no, I've reformed this bubble and Bumble. He wants a job. Look what he can do. And the Bumble puts the star on the tree and has the cute, sweet smile. Isn't it a cute? I think it's a really cute
That's
moment.
The best.
Yeah.
And the collective elfin cheer. Hooray!
Yeah. Hey. That's so great. And this is when we learn that Bumbles bounce.
Right.
That's the thing about Bumbles.
Is that why he hated Christmas? Just because he wasn't part of it, do you think? Mm-hmm. But now that he has a job, he doesn't hate Christmas?
Yeah.
Like, what's the message
Maybe
there?
Maybe another misfit.
Exactly. Oh. He was another misfit and probably was angry for being a misfit. And just, again, we just had to accept him.
Right.
By and taking his teeth out.
Gangly. Right. Let's just rip his teeth out.
All right. So Santa is relieved. And, okay. This was my thought. I'm pitching this one. I think because of some of the things that went on were not right. All right. I'm with you on that. The Santa, he's got to be accountable. Foreman's got to be accountable. But I honestly think it starts with Santa. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm relieving Santa of his duties. Temporary suspension. He's going to go be the foreman now. Okay, and he needs to bring some Santa back into that workshop. He needs to remember what it's all about. Guess who takes over?
I'm UConn. Putting UConn there. Nice.
That's right. UConn. Nice,
guys. I'm reading what you're writing down, Kev.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Santa's the foreman, but under a committee that is run by Hermie. They're going to check in on standards and practices. Yeah, yeah.
Where does the foreman, the current foreman, go? Is he just on the line?
No, vice foreman. No, vice foreman. Yeah, he gets knocked down a peg.
Okay.
And then we just see. Why, Rick?
Same
why
pay
you
or?
It's a very top-heavy management structure you've built there, Kev. There's a lot of generals and no workers. But maybe it'd solve some of that misfit toy business and improve quality. So
right.
And Kev, can I ask? Are you doing this? Kev, are you making these changes the day before Christmas Eve? I question the time.
No. Shh. This is one of those things that this is when suits just sit back. I would be there with my suit, nodding, smiling,
latte.
Having it. Yeah, just or maybe some eggnog. No, everyone, isn't this wonderful? This is terrific. And I'm making my mental notes. No, this is definitely the Monday morning after Christmas. This is when, This is when, you know, emails and letters go out. And yeah, we take it from there. So no, it wouldn't happen then. All right. Now, Santa feels bad for the kids because he's going to have to cancel Christmas. And again, we see the nice Santa, and they were so good this year. I've got some bad news. But then Rudolph's nose goes out, and he kind of turns back in a jerk Santa again.
Right.
Can you, Rudolph, please, that nose, can you turn it down a bit? I mean that nose. And then he realizes the power of the nose. That nose, that beautiful nose, and you're going to guide me through. Rudolph says it will be an honor. Donner, I knew it all along. I knew the nose would be great all along. I see Rick just... Okay, Rick, let us have it.
No, I'm just, I mean, you have to give it to Rudolph. Just he's so selfless, but he should have peaced out. Sorry, Santa, you're on your own. Good luck in the blizzard.
I agree, Rick.
That Santa wasn't very Santa-y. That's all I got to say. He didn't look like it. He didn't act like it. He could not be Santa.
And Elaine will die on that hill. She hated okay, it.
I did not. I did too, even as a kid. No, even as a kid, I did not like the Santa. And I used to, as a child... I remember being horrified by this, but just not to the point of I didn't love the special and I didn't love the messages and I didn't love the meaning, the good positive messages, but it definitely all spooked me and horrified me. And what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I don't think Rudolph should back out now. This is the moment he's been waiting for. Like he finally gets the recognition of that his nose is special. So why back out now,
Rick? Exactly. But well, what the young generation is going to realize is when all their dreams don't come true because they quit. This is a Christmas show, but we had a call last week with a millennial celebrity, young millennial celebrity, by the way. And there was another millennial on the phone that works, you know, in tandem, not a celebrity, works behind the scenes. And the millennial works behind the scenes was saying, you know, I love how Gen Z just quits. They don't take any crap from anyone. They just quit jobs. They quit this. They quit that, whenever they want. And I wish I could be like that. The millennial celebrity said, well, I will tell you, if I spoke up for myself every time I wanted to, or if I quit something every time I didn't get my way, she's like, I wouldn't have any of the success I have now. She's like, I had to hang in. I had to put up with it. And then as you get older, I've earned power. And now I draw lines and things. And then when we turned it back on the other millennial, who's also very successful behind the scenes, I'm like, now look at your life. And I went over some of the hard people this person had worked for. I'm like, if you'd quit. So I agree that I'm glad that he doesn't quit because he gets to have his moment. But I also think, can someone just please step above the bar in life? Mm-hmm. Does everyone do we just have to continue to lower the bar, meet force with force, you know, meet anger with anger? You know, can somebody just be the one to rise above and go, yeah, you guys were all jerks, but now I'm not going to become a jerk. I'm going to save Christmas and I'm going to do what's right for these kids. And by the way, I'll do what's right by Santa and my dad. They apologized and that's that. But I think that's what's lost is because everyone most people have to win, either quit and walk away from any pain, which unfortunately pain is growth. But yeah, like to me, that was, I think the message he rose above them. And I don't think that's a bad thing. He rose above them. And now if they were going to continue to treat him like that, then I think there's something to be said, because I don't think you should let yourself be abused. But I love the idea that I'd like to think that he was better than all of them. So next time you're the one doing the right thing and everyone around you isn't, and I've been this person even as a boss where I started lowering the bar myself, like, okay, you guys are going to be like this. Well, I'll be like that back. And then thankfully in a matter of days, and I have a wife to shake me up, say, no, why would you go down and be that when, no, you're not that. You need to, you know, be who you are. And I love the redeeming qualities of Hermie and of Rudolph and of UConn. Again, it's going to sound crazy. We're talking this serious about this, but when we get into in our post wrap up of the sentiment that's gone out there about this, I kind of feel like it needs to be said.
Yeah, good points, Kev.
So Kevin,
I have to say just one thing about that though, yeah, Kev. Did Santa actually apologize?
He did. Well, he said even Santa knew, and didn't he say to him, you know, I'm sorry too, because I know
did he? Okay, Sam,
but he did get cranky when he saw the light again, and that bothered me. But again, does that mean because he's an old jerk stuck in his ways. Does that mean that we all collectively lower the bar? Which, by the way, I feel like we do as a society. And is that making us any better? Hmm. It's not, you know. So, well, UConn in my version finds peppermint. He's like, what I was looking for all along, peppermint. And you see Hermie roll his eyes and go back into the snow. But again, to me, proving he's every bit of a misfit. It's Christmas Eve, and we go to the island of misfit toys. And this, as we know now, was reshot the year after the original airing. It's Christmas Eve. It looks like we'll be forgotten again. But Rudolph promised this time. Great quote here. Might as well go to bed and dream of next year. And then it gets even more powerful. And again, the younger generation has all their dreams come true, I guess. So this doesn't resonate with them. But this really killed me when Dolly says, I haven't any dreams left. Oh, my God. Right? Thank you, Anne. Right? Mm-hmm.
It's still heavy after all these years.
I found it so heavy. But then the elephant, the polka dot elephant, hears the jingling. And look, it's Rudolph leading the way. You can see his nose from here.
Yes. Which
again, we call back to that being his strength. Rudolph at full power. Will Santa says, Rudolph, full power. And off they go. And the new credit sequence is the present is these misfit toys being dropped off to new homes with Burl Ives singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And that takes us out of it. I love the ending. Yes, definitely very bumpy and moments definitely that show the time period. But not enough to take me out of it. I still think this is beautiful and very sweet. But Rick, I think we talked about this. Your kids, it just didn't resonate at all. They just weren't Christmas special kids in general, you had said.
In general, yeah. And more so when we're talking about the peanut specials. They liked Rudolph a bit better sure.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. And nieces, nephews. No, go ahead, Rick. Go ahead, please.
No, I'm done.
Please, nieces, Anne. Nephews. This is definitely, there's a line. So I have nieces and grandkids who range from 4 to 26. So the older ones, not so much into Rudolph, kind of in line with Kelsey and Elaine. But my young niece, Amanda, who's 11, loves it.
We just did a soft sign peace smile for everyone. But Amanda, 11-year-old. Well, I will say this.
12. She's 12. Yeah.
And you know, I'll say this. It's one of the most popular toys being sold. These Rankin Bass toys are super popular with the kids. So I think maybe there's a renaissance that's taking place. So we've obviously gone deep discussing this, but there's definitely been a lot of fervor and extreme sentiment around this special. And I know you pulled some quotes from articles and some paragraphs from different articles that have been written that I thought would be interesting for you to go over.
Yeah, so for sure.
Take it from there.
Great. So from Slate.com in 2017 and an article by Christina Catarucci, she writes, for generations, ever since the story was written as a poem in 1939 and popularized as a song a decade later, Rudolph's lesson was interpreted more simply. Don't make fun of people who are different, because everyone has something to offer. But around the time of the internet, people became the place for people to revisit problematic themes of old artworks and for parents to fret about how they were raising their kids. Santa and his crew came in for a long overdue reckoning. Rudolph, quote unquote, doesn't want to teach you kindness or charity or any of that crap. It only wants to teach you spite and how to commit hate crimes. That's from a blogger in 2010. Parenting groups on Facebook have hosted debates about whether it's better to watch the TV special with kids and discuss what's messed up about it or to keep it away from them altogether. In 2013, Michael Schaefer argued in the New Republic that the story, and this is a quote, presents a fairly grim Hobbesian version of society. If you want to be accepted, you have to prove your economic utility, which in the case of magical flying reindeer appears to only involve the annual sleigh pull. Fox News had a bit of a different take, surprisingly, on a 2011 episode of The Five. Host Greg Gutfeld mocked a professor of special education who said, and this is a quote, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer promoted bullying. And he goes on to say, like most profs, he pursues his opinion while ignoring facts. Gutfeld said, we know what smacks you around, makes you stronger. I mean, how has the liberal-loving media helped President Obama? Not well. He has made more missteps than a tap dancer during an earthquake. But his fan-based media killed him, which is why he got creamed in 2010. In other words, Rudolph needs to be shamed for his appearance in order to reach his potential. An even worse moral of the story, most parents would agree. Later in the same segment, Andrea Tartanos, who would go on to sue Roger Ailes.
I see this now. And other Fox News colleagues for sexual harassment, praised Rudolph for dealing with the hostile work environment the right way by declining to sue Santa. Oh, okay, and then didn't you have, and what else did you have, Anne, before we break this down?
I had a couple of I had a few other controversial comments that weren't so much from different articles, but more just a collection of things just from doing general research. So, you know, the HuffPost, People Magazine, The Atlantic, et cetera. And it was more kind of questions about, like, you know, what we covered is Santa mean. But at the end scene, does the bird get murdered in the closing credits since that bird was the one in the Misfit Toys that couldn't fly? He could only swim.
No umbrella for him?
No umbrella for the bird.
Yeah, I've heard that one before too, yeah. Okay, so I have something in December 2020, more recent from The Atlantic. Caitlin Flanagan, the article's entitled, "Don't Subject Your Kids to Rudolph. The world is bleak enough as it is." There's a lot in Rudolph that people don't seem to remember. At one point, the abominable snowman tries to murder Rudolph in front of his parents. As our gentle hero lies face down, concussed and unresponsive, his own girlfriend, the beautiful long-lashed Clarice, wonders aloud why the snowman won't put the little reindeer out of his misery. Santa presides over a non-union shop where underproducing elves are deprived of breaks and humiliated. We are supposed to understand that blonde, dreamy-eyed Hermie wants to be a dentist, not a toy maker. What he really wants to do, in my opinion, is join the drama club. But that might have been too much for NBC. Form an elf who, come the revolution, will not be dealt with kindly, humiliates him repeatedly. When Hermie tells his boss tentatively that he doesn't want to make toys, Foreman Elf repeats the phrase in the sissy voice that has haunted gay boys down through the ages. "Shame on you," cry the other elves, further demoralizing Hermie. Rudolph thinks it teaches children to be themselves, and maybe it does, but it also teaches them how to taunt a boy who seems different. In the time-honored tradition of kids in this situation, Hermie runs away. Elves in Santa's workshop are not supposed to be shamed, gay-bashed, and forced to run away. What kind of BS was this? And how could the Kool-Aid drinkers look at their Christmas toys in the same way, knowing they might be covered in the tears of an exploited and broken-hearted elf? So, anyway, very humorous, and I think, you know, I don't know how serious this person is. But you go back to some of the other sentiment. I mean, even though it was one thing for the people to criticize Rudolph in the first article in the Slate, but then even to hear the ridiculous rebuttal by the Fox News people.
I know. I think that's where it really became ridiculous.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, there's obviously, to me, it all comes back to one thing, and I know I'll get a lot of get a lot of anger for this. I just think we have it too good and we have too much free time. I think other places people who are trying to feed their children, you know, people.
And on our news channel, we're talking about Rudolph.
People who are, you know, trying to survive. I just don't think you have time to look at these things this way. You know, I think these things are taken at face value and on to the next, you know.
Look, Kev, I think there's value in looking at it, in analyzing society from it, you know, how far we've come. I mean,
yes,
I think one of the things about Rudolph. Like,
yes, but I don't hear that in those articles. That's a great point, Rick. But I don't hear that, like, isn't it different today, well, back then? I felt it was much more shameful of just being shameful to the work rather than, wow, times have changed.
True. They probably didn't wrap the bow on it the way they should have. But like that comment about it being Hobbesian, right? And it's okay if you're different, if you're of use somehow. I mean, that's a big stride we've made present day, I think, where you can be different and you don't have to be of any use to anybody. That's not
right.
What the measure of a human being is. You know, but I think that's why Rudolph rubs me a little poorly is because, yeah, Rudolph was okay as long as he could help Santa. You know, then everything's okay. And the Bumble's okay if he can put the star on the tree. But if he can't be of service to the rest of us, then what's your value?
Well, I don't know.
That kind of bothered me a bit.
But the Bumble wouldn't have been okay to me if he's out eating people. But Rudolph, I would have been fine if he didn't save the day. All I wanted from Rudolph was a comeuppance. I just wanted to see some kind of comeuppance.
You
know what I mean? Some kind of justice, which I feel like he got, but in the best way, rather than
he
could have went after.
He was noble.
Bullies. Yeah, he was noble. He was noble.
Yeah. See, I think part of me wanted, yes, Rudolph should care about the kids and the toys getting there on time, but he should have let Santa have it a little bit too, you know, and instead of just, yes, sir, how may I be assistance to you?
Yeah, but you know what I think? Like, I think Santa's got to live with Santa.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
My brain is
looking back at this and be like, God, man, I really was a jerk back then.
Right. But I think that's why, like, and to your point, Kev, like all these articles and news reporters who are looking at this 1964 holiday special, Christmas special, and then holding it to standards of whether it's 2017 or today, it's like, I think we could look at it back and be like, okay, these are how it was. You know, the coaches were mean, the bosses were tough, the dads, it was the man's world. Was it right? No, but it was what it was. So it's almost like a historic perspective on Americana. And we can look back and be like, okay, this is now not like that. But then you can provide grace to your grandparents or parents who lived through that, to your point too, Kev. And it's like, that's why we're not always jumping on board of the new Gen Z and millennial ideologies, because that's not how it was.
Right.
So use it as a teaching point instead.
That's what I think. Because I just, again, I just think anger and, you know, spite and all that stuff. And it's a natural emotion, but I just think it keeps making a bigger mess.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know there's extremes where you have to obviously go to that extreme in certain wars. We had to, World War II, you know, we had to. I mean, this is really ridiculous. We're talking about Rudolph, but I feel like I'll go back to what I said, because we all have a $1,000 phone in our pocket. I mean, our lives just afford us the ability, you know, the time and the privilege and the affluence to even do a podcast about a Christmas special, let alone write articles to dissect it. But I just wish the perspective would be, that was then and this is now, and let's do it better now. And if we're not doing it, let's not look at this as a way to do things again that way. Let's keep going in the direction we're going. I don't know. But again, like when I hear the defense of it from Fox News, I wanted to cringe too.
Right.
Like totally insane.
Extremes. Once again, it's the extremes.
They just remind me of 80s, you know, Rick, 80s wrestling. Yep. You know, when I see the commentators on there, sometimes it reminds me of Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon. It's just like so over the top, so extreme, so pointed, you know, in their point of view. So they're like, listen, we leave it to all of you on this episode. You know, it's a multi-parter for obvious reasons, because this is the granddaddy of all of them. I wouldn't say Charlie Brown. I think this is the one that is the beginning of all the great Christmas specials. It'll be interesting to see if this new baby generation with the toys and stuff keeps the tradition going. I actually think it's gonna. What do you guys think? Do you think it goes on, or, you know,
I loved Rudolph as a toy. My sister loved Rudolph as a toy. I think that like the Rudolph, like, is kind of iconic in that sense.
Yeah, like even when we were watching the movie, Kelsey was bursting out into songs at certain parts, and I'm like, I don't know how I knew it, but she was just like, I was like, oh, okay, cool. But like that was, you know, Rudolph is Rudolph, and we love the story of like, you know, somebody accepting our.
You know,
flaws.
What we haven't talked about, which, you know, it's the fact that you would think after all these years now, this is how many years later, right? It's like 60, almost 60 years later.
Yeah, 58 years.
But he doesn't really, Rudolph the character doesn't really show up in other pieces of intellectual property. But unlike Santa and the other reindeer, where that intellectual property is not owned, Rudolph's owned. as an intellectual property. People have rights to him and own the character. So that's why you don't see him show up. And in fact, that's why in other other Rank and Bass specials, they never mention Rudolph. When they do, the specific Rudolph ones, they're getting the rights and going through all the hoops. But that's why you know he's in the song, he's in this, and then you know he'd be in other things that are approved where he's paid, or that you know whoever owns the character's paid, which I think is just Warner Brothers at this point. But whereas Santa and the other reindeer, you can write about them for days. Nobody owns them.
Right.
Kind of interesting. So listen, you guys, thank you so much for your patience tuning into this. I'm sure you have your strong thoughts as well. Feel free to share them at Apple Podcasts in the comments for the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. You can text us.
Our text number is 351-251-2511. That text number again is 351-251-2511.
By the way, did you guys ever see a phone with a dial, Kelsey and Elaine?
Yes.
Yes. Did you ever put your finger in one? And did you ever use one?
We had a landline growing up. I did.
But did you have a with a dial phone, like an actual
rotary?
Rotary phone, rotary phone.
I've used one. Yeah.
I've never used one, but my grandma had like a landline that was like a fake rotary one because she wanted the look, but the technology is the easy one, so.
Love that.
Rick and Ann, you've had your share of rotaries.
My parents still have one hanging in the kitchen.
Oh my goodness.
And all their grandkids when they were young would go over and want to dial at grandma and pa's because it was so fun. And it was more of a challenge than one would think, especially the nine.
You know, I'm
the nine
I'm
and the zero.
I think I want to bring it back.
Yeah.
I think I want to bring it back.
If you're ever in Franklin, Mass, I'll give you a tour and you can all dial from my parents' rotary.
Well, guys, as the march to the holidays continues, keep watching all your specials. Rick, with your kids, did you watch this live? These things live, or was it the DVD got stuck in and you left the room?
Watched it live, actually. Most of them. Yeah. I think it's important. I mean, I think it's part of our, you know, the fabric of our culture. So, we're privileged and we have all this time to do this stuff that's really not that important in the grand scheme. But it is kind of why we're American, you know, it makes us. So I kind of like it. Yeah.
May that be said of us all. All right, you guys.
Yes.
Until our next episode, everyone, happy holidays. And 'tis the season. As they say, keep watching those specials.